Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Way back in 2005, two brothers set off on a road trip that would save the world and change television.
Cheech and Chong.
Oh, man, no. Nope, that's a different road trip. For 15 seasons and 327 episodes, Supernatural took audiences on a wild ride of family, fate, and faith with a rocking soundtrack and a seriously cool car.
But that was then, Bobbo, and this is now. And yes, the show has quote-unquote ended, but we're not quite done with the journey.
No, we're not.
And that's why we're watching it all over again, or for Rob and me, for the first time.
That's right.
Diving deep into every episode of Supernatural with the fine folks who made it. And we're taking you along for the ride.
Whether you like it or not. I'm Rob Benedict. I played Chuck Shirley, a.k.a. God.
Spoiler!
Yeah, it is a bit of a spoiler, but hey, spoilers are fair game here.
Fine. And I'm Richard Spate Jr., and I played the Trickster, also known as the Archangel Gabriel, and I did a little bit of Loki work in there.
Okay, you know what? We're running out of time.
Okay, well, we'll be talking about the entire series, so whatever we say, accept it. You've been warned.
So buckle up and settle in.
Because this, my friend, is Supernatural, then and now.
Hey, everybody. This is Rob Benedict.
And this is Richard Spate.
And we're talking about Season 2, Episode 6 of Supernatural.
It's called No Exit, Rob.
Yes, it is.
You know why?
Because why?
There's no exit.
That's a good creative title. Well, you know, before we get into the show, let me just say, be sure to rate us on iTunes and on the Spotify.
Well, hold on now. Grade us a 5. If you think we're a 4 or a 3, you know, don't bother. Just stand down.
Yeah. Remember, 5 stars equals 2 full beards.
And 5 stars equals 2 full beards equals 2 happy fellas.
That's right. So help us build an audience for the podcast. Share the clips we're posting on Instagram and Twitter to help us get the word out.
On to the show.
All right. So Sam and Dean walk in on Joe and her mom, Ellen, arguing at Harvell's.
Oh, yeah. They're going at it, too, man. They're hot.
Yeah. They're running hot. Joe pulls out a folder on a case that she's been building. In Philadelphia, 6 young blonde women have disappeared in the same building. Ellen won't let Joe go investigate, so Sam and Dean agree to take the case.
That's nice.
Yeah, they head to Philadelphia and break into the apartment where the disappearance happened. There they find dark goo, which we found out is called ectoplasm, which I have one. I need to have it taken off. This indicates an angry spirit. As they're in the hall trying to leave the building, they run into the landlord and Joe. She poses as Dean's girlfriend and says that they want to rent the apartment and pulls out a wad of cash. I don't know about you, but I was worried when Joe just got rid of that cash that she earned playing poker.
It seemed like not a fiscally responsible move, but, no. You know, she was in a mood to not listen to her elders.
She really was. She was in a mood. That night, another girl in the building disappears.
Oh, man.
Yeah. The trio investigate and discover that next door to the apartment building, there used to be a prison.
That's never good.
No. The prison would execute people in the vacant lot next door, the site of the current apartment building. The team get a list of the people executed and find the name H.H. Holmes, America's first serial killer, which Rich assumed was cereal, but it's cereal.
Okay. Well, that's a really long pause to get for that.
Well,
joke.
There's a delay, and I'm kind of waiting for you to chime in because you keep saying I'm cutting you off, but you're not chiming in.
And then honestly, I'm not jumping in because we are stepping on each other. So I'm letting you go through it more because it's real.
That's fun.
But it created that magic moment.
Yeah. Which we hope will make it at least to the bloopers. After he was executed, Holmes, H.H. Holmes, I'm talking about, America's first serial killer.
Cereal like breakfast food?
There he is. So Holmes had his coffin covered in concrete. Burning the bones isn't going to be an option. So in their investigation, they learned that Holmes used to keep some of the victims in the walls to torture them.
You know what his friends used to say when they wanted to know what was going on with him? They say,
Sup, Holmes.
Sup, Holmes. Exactly.
They decide to get into the walls to see what they can find. Joe gets abducted by the ghost. Ellen calls looking for her daughter. Dean tells her she's been captured.
Oh, man, you don't want to be the guy telling Ellen that.
Hell no. And Ellen says, I'm getting on a plane. So meanwhile, she gets locked in a metal coffin and is taunted by the home spirit.
Ugh.
She fends it off with an iron knife. Sam and Dean are now in the sewer beneath the building. They discover that this is where the ghost is hiding its victims. So they find Joe and the previous victim, Teresa. I don't know what happened to the very first victim. She's toast, I guess.
She didn't fare well. Yeah, no. She was gone.
They use Joe to bait and trap the spirit in a ring of salt. Then they bury the chamber in cement. Ellen catches up to them and escorts them back to Harvell's. Yeah. Joe, Sam, and Dean learn at this point that Joe's father died while on a hunt with John, and he may be responsible.
Ba-ba-ba-ba.
John, that is. So, listen, let's talk about this episode. You really liked it, I heard.
I thought it was really creepy. I mean, you know, you go into, I think the Ellen and Joe characters are great. I think the Harvells as a home base is really cool. Mm-hmm. And again, I know where the story goes, but I am shocked that that didn't land longer as a home base. Well, it's really good.
Don't tell me, because I don't know.
you're just like, even when you're shooting your own episodes, you're like, la, 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 don't tell me. I think it's a really good episode. I think it's, the ghost of the day here, the monster of the week, was really creepy. I thought I thought her getting trapped in that box, and that, you know, the tomb she was held in while she waited for the guy to come kill her, was really creepy and really well shot to be creepy.
Yeah. Yep. Anytime you have a serial killer, you know, hunting young women with blonde hair, it's a little creepy. Not my favorite thing to watch. But yeah, it was definitely scary. And great lighting from Serge.
Always. I tell you, these early seasons, and we'll talk to Serge about this. I know for a fact at some point the network made him lighten the show up. They thought it was too dark. Hmm. I like this dark look way more. I think they should have left him alone. I think it's so cool and edgy and dark looking. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also say that I like the Dean-Joe dynamic. I think they're good together on screen.
Me too. Me too. No, it's great to have that, you know, have them working as a trio. It really mixes it up. And it, you know, cause sometimes, you know, whether it's Dad or Bobby, now it's Joe. Yeah. I love that. And you know, I like the through lines. You know, what makes this show cool is that the through lines that are going on, you know, we're finding more out about John, their dad. You know, it's not just the monster of the week. There's a through line. That's what keeps me kind of going. We're revealing more about the greater story that we're involved in. And they're doing some different stuff this season. You know, they don't, it used to be like, it begins with a murder. I guess this one did kind of, but it begins with like the case. Then they go and they solve the case, but it's just not coming together in the same exact way. We're not quite sure what's going to happen. I don't know. The way they're revealing it is a little bit different this season. I enjoy that. With this episode, it felt a little bit contrived at times, but I really liked the look of it. It was another one directed by Kim Manners, and it was really well directed. And so I'm going to give it a beard that's a groomed beard.
Okay.
But maybe it's trying too hard. Like it has color. Like a gentleman has colored the beard.
But like not a color that matches his eyebrows, you know, like sort
exactly,
of.
Exactly. Exactly. You?
Man, that's a really intricate beard review. So does that mean like, you think it's really good, but not great. Is that a fair way of saying it?
I thought it was really good. It had really good moments, but it felt a little bit like the story. You know, sometimes it was a bit too perfect. Like they're looking down a list of the prisoners from the who might be responsible, and they're like, hey, look, it's H.H. Holmes, America's first serial killer. It came together too convenient. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go... I hear what you're saying. I think the dynamic of the characters kind of make up for it. I'm going to go with trimmed beard. So slightly better view than yours, not the coloring version. Not a full bushy beard, not like a, oh man, all, you know, full tilt, massive home run. I'm going to go solid episode. Good triple.
Good.
Trimmed beard.
Yeah, I like that.
All right.
Well, one thing that we both agree on is that Alona Tall is lovely, and she's doing a great job, and we love seeing her working with the boys.
She's great on the show.
And she did. She was in 7 episodes of Supernatural. You can now see her in CBS's SEAL Team. She also had huge roles in Veronica Mars, Burn Notice, and Hand of God, and guest appearances on CSI, Cold Case, Ghost Whisperer, and Pretty Little Liars.
By the way, I don't even know if we announced to people that we had her coming on. So really, we have a double surprise. Yeah. Our surprise is Alona Tall is our guest.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's the only surprise. But anyway, Alona Tall is our guest, which is awesome.
Yeah. I guess I thought that maybe when people like are listening to the episode, it says like special guest star Alona Tall.
I think sometimes we say it because I know it's on there. Sometimes they're like, oh, we got Alona Tall showing up here. But we didn't. Right. So maybe I'm just surprised.
Right. that's all right. Yeah. Well, at any rate, that was my introduction for our guest today. And please give it up for the lovely Alona Tall. Let's start with a question we like to ask everybody that has the same answer, really. But how did you like working with Jared and Jensen?
I'm so hoping somebody hated them someday.
If you just let me speak, I was going to say that I hated every single moment.
Thank God.
It's hell. No pun intended. No, I mean, I wish I could say that because then it would be interesting and different. They were just new spring chickens back then, these bright-eyed young pranksters. They were fun. It was just such a, it was still like the new phase of the show. It felt very fresh and, I don't know, uncharted, if you will. Yeah. They were excited. Yeah. They were hard work. They were there all the time. It was still in the days where like they drove in with the rest of the cast.
Wow.
What?
I don't remember those days.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. 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 It's before Cliff. Very different. Very different days.
Wow.
Still the same guys. It was just like, you know, that's much smaller trailers.
Can't imagine.
I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they were great though. I mean.
Yeah.
They had both come from hugely successful shows. I heard about them, funny enough, the year before from a director that I did a pilot in Vancouver. And they asked me, hey, did you get to work with the boys on Supernatural yet? And I was like, what's that? No. Who are they? And they were, so word was like going around town about how great they were to work with already in season one before like the show even aired. So I was excited going in. I had actually met Jensen before all of this. We auditioned for a movie together. And when I came on the set, we were like, hey, I know you. And that was kind of nice to see a familiar face because it was like, we shared an awkward auditioning experience together, which is never, it's always good to have with a fellow actor.
Yeah. And you guys on screen, you have this great chemistry together, you and he, you know, which really plays.
I would like to take credit, but I think Jensen can have chemistry with a cactus.
That's true. That's true. In fact, he often calls me cactus. he's great. He's good like that.
No, what about Samantha Ferris? Like Samantha Ferris is really your partner in crime for these episodes. How did you guys get on upon first meeting?
She's one of the funniest, crass, in the best possible way, by the way, because I enjoy in Hebrew, we call her Balabusta. I know it sounds weird, but it's like this woman who owns the space she's in, makes no excuses for who she is, and is fabulous because she's so good at what she does. And she took on this role of this like hot mama to mother to me and mama to the boys. It was just, I felt like she kept the ship going for like the Roadhouse crew.
Yeah.
Cause I was like the newbie. She was this take control lady. And then, oh my God, I'm Ash.
Yeah. Chad Lindbergh.
Chad, my God. Oh, yeah. Chad, please forgive me for this. He was this like, I'm sure you're going to ask me about him as well, but he was this like insane character that just how to make things weird was basically his motto. and he did it.
Yep. That's Chad. Yeah. My first convention was actually one of my first conventions in England was with her and him. So I met them early on in like 2000.
How did that go?
Or something. It was hilarious. I mean, it was crazy. They're both crazy and it was awesome. You know, I find Chad really charming in his weirdness. You know, I really like that kid.
Extremely, extremely. Yeah. Super charming. It wins you over. Yeah.
Yeah. No, even though he's like maybe a few years younger than me and Rich, we always call him the kid.
He feels that way. Yeah. Honestly, if he felt that way to me.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I'm older or younger than him. Honestly, if you told me that I was older than him, I'd be like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
At this point, you might have lapped him. It's hard to know with Chad. Here's a question for you about your episode.
Go.
It's scary as crap getting stuck in that box. Like I was watching the episode and you get crammed in that coffin-like tomb. Was that creepy?
Yeah. Yes, it was. So I don't like confined spaces personally. And they asked me, and the thing is, because I don't want to sound unprofessional. Like, oh, I got scared. I didn't get scared, but it was easy to go to my normal, you know, claustrophobic anxiety.
Yeah.
And it was dirty. I mean, it seemed dirty, but it wasn't. Yeah.
Look, I think it's totally reasonable that you'd get creeped out by a set. I know that you know that you're safe, right? You're like, because you know there's a set,
yes,
you know the crew's there. But nonetheless, shove somebody into a space with 4 inches above their nose. I mean, that's weird. That's a creepy sensation.
It was uncomfortable.
With a creepy
also,
hand.
Like, my neck really hurt.
Yeah.
That was actually really funny, to be honest with you. Because
really?
That was it. So they took out that wall. They kept taking out, you know, the wall, so it didn't feel as confined, because that was when the wall was. And then I think there were a lot of outtakes. They never put them in the gag reel of like the hand doing things it wasn't supposed to do.
Oh, really?
In frame. Yeah, because it's this dude and he's right there and only his hand is, you know, in makeup, and everyone, and the camera's right there, and that there's no fourth wall. So I'm like pretending that I'm obviously can't see anything. And all of a sudden that hand comes in. I'm also seeing his face, and the acting face for the acting hand was priceless for me.
Wow.
Cause like, we always make fun of like hand acting or back of the head acting, right? When we do things like inserts or when you're back, the back of your head is in frame. He did some serious hand acting.
Nice.
It was an intense, he had an intense face.
Yeah.
While off camera. It was really fun.
Yeah, that's funny.
And it was very hard not to laugh at it. Because it's such an awkward situation.
Yeah, so awkward. So at the end of this episode, we find out that your dad was killed doing battle with Jensen's dad, right? With Sam Adine's dad. Do you remember that?
Yes.
On a hunting trip. Right. And at first, I felt like we were going to find out that you're like Sam Adine's half sister or something, because, you know, she was like, it's just something with that about John Winchester that I had this history with. So you're thinking that maybe, you know, your mom and their father had a relationship. Did you think that when you first read the script?
Honestly, I think that if I remember correctly, again, because it was so long ago, so there were a lot of life changes to this living thing called the Roadhouse crew, right? But when I first talked to Eric, to Kripke, about it, he did say that I was like a little, that was a potential, that they were that I was like a little sister, like a half sister. And then we were going to find that was something that could have happened, but they weren't sure if it was going to go there or potential love interest. He wasn't sure what he wanted to do. I don't remember if it was the network. Somebody wanted it to be a love interest, but then it would have been, he was amused by the thought of it being really creepy that they were going towards love interest and then finding out that a half sister. I think it was a little too much for the network back then.
Yeah.
Shame on them.
although I thought it was a really, I mean, playing with the potential love interest, but never fully going there, and then finding out that she was a sister would have been fun, because it would have led to like this like moment between
funny. Yeah, it would have been funny.
It would have been really funny.
Yeah.
A little ahead of its time, perhaps, but but that never ended up happening, and neither did the love interest thing. So, you know, there's that.
Oh.
I kind of thought, I took the bait as a viewer. I thought you were going to come out as his half-sister. And I mean, I know I probably would have known that going to so many conventions. I would have heard that already. But nonetheless, watching the episode, I'm like, oh, they did it. And they had a daughter. Oh, man.
Yeah.
So it fooled me.
It made perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I mean, Rob and I kind of bemuse, you know, we kind of think out loud a lot about what drives the decision-making of writers, and Lord knows, we don't know. But your character is one of the prime examples of they could have gone so many different directions. I mean, like, and they could have been, there's a parallel universe where you end up being a regular on that show for 15 seasons. You know what I mean? Like, your character really is attached. And Roadhouse could have become more of a home-based set. Like, you know, when you watch the season up now, like, you know, later on they had Men of Letters. Roadhouse was definitely like, seemed like the one standing set the show had for a while.
I think that was what it was supposed to be. I remember Eric mentioning that, I mean, that the character was supposed to go on for much longer. Joe and Ellen. It was supposed to be that. And back then, in the what now seems like the Stone Ages, there were the fan forums. It wasn't even like
not Twitter.
Wasn't around yet.
Log on. There were forums for the on the CW website or not CW? Was it CW then?
Yeah, just.
I don't even. Yes, it was just turned into CW. They had CW forums, and fans would go on and express their opinions. And they, I mean, let's not sugarcoat it. They hated my character.
No way.
Why?
They, I don't know. They hated her.
We'll be right back.
You can sense it calling out to you.
New reality seeks you.
Join the journey to save Anomaly.
Place where sound is magic. The only way to enter the world is by looking inward.
Along the way, you'll learn potions, chants, and enchantments that will help you both in that reality and yours.
So, answer the call and let your campaign begin.
Featuring the voices of Ruth Conroll from Supernatural and Dead Boy Detectives.
There are ordeals ahead, yet with guidance, you will face them head on without fear.
Todd Stashwick from Star Trek Picard and 12 Monkeys.
When the time arrives, wherever your journey takes you, be there with no attachments.
And R&B singer NC Gray.
There are worlds, realms, dimensions, and realities beyond yours.
Anomaly is a role-playing meditation podcast that takes you into a world of magic and fantasy. You'll be invited to imagine yourself in scenarios such as learning to cast a tranquility spell or exploring a land vanquished by a dragon, but all connected by a shared mythology. The goal of guided fantasy role-playing meditations are to help you cultivate a sense of wonder, curiosity, balance, and joy in your inner world. Role-playing meditation is a form of escapism and relaxation, as well as a creative outlet for the imagination. The first campaign is an introduction to the world of Anomaly, its lands, magic, and secrets. In the 8 chapters, you'll stretch your imagination, learn to center yourself, offer forgiveness, find confidence, relieve stress, and stop racing thoughts. Your true self will emerge, allowing you to manage your goals and dreams without confusion, distrust, or self-doubt. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Or visit seekanomaly.com to learn more. Anomaly spelled with an I-E, not a Y.
Seek Anomaly. Hear its magic.
Thanks for listening. Now, back to the episode.
And then everything shifted. That's all I remember. I remember because I was, you know, I was young and newish into this business. So I made the mistake of going on and like, ah, are people responding to the character? Big mistake.
You know, that screams women don't like it when one of the boys has a girlfriend. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it was sure. You. I know that there have been instances when like Sam is in love with a character and they'll just like not love that character. Cause they part of the lone wolf fantasy of the boys on the road doing their own thing, I think drives a lot of that female viewership in a way that they don't want them to settle down. And you were an obvious partner for Dean. You know what I mean? That rapport.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially like season 2, that was where it was going.
Yeah.
And that was, she was brought in there. And I remember Eric telling me like, you are the female version of him. So act, you know, how cocky he walks around and he was all this like, you know, the bravado of the Dean character. I tried to have a little bit of that in Joe without making it too obnoxious.
Right.
And it just was, it backfired.
Well, I don't think it backfired. I thought you were great. I mean, I think You do a great job.
Well, as
job
far
the
as the response of the viewers, right. It backfired. Right.
I don't think there's anything you could have done. Again, I think it's all about affection for the boys. I think Meryl Streep could have played the role and they'd have been like, boo. I think it's affection they don't want to see.
I agree. But nonetheless, the response of the viewers was not what was intended, right? It wasn't what was expected. It wasn't right. what the writers yeah. and the brilliant creator of the show were wanting. So they had to pivot. And that's only yeah. me assuming I wasn't in the rooms, right? But then the way it pivoted was so parallel to what they were writing that I could yeah. only assume that it was influenced by a show that really does listen to its fan base, which is a good thing
yeah.
for the show and for the fans, not so much for me.
yeah. yeah. Well, it does feel like that the writers are kind of flirting with the Roadhouse being a regular set and you being a love interest for Dean. It feels like they're just kind of playing around with it. And at this point, they haven't had anything like this in the show, right?
No.
They really are lone wolves for the first season.
In season one, he had a girl, because in preparation, I had to watch the entire season. I remember saying like, okay, so he did have this one girl. I think her character's name, Cassie, am I right? She was, you should know, you just saw it.
I know. We should know. It's not ringing a bell.
You talking about Dean?
Oh, Rob, it's the one with it's the truck episode where he goes back to see the gal and the truck is chasing him around.
She's a really pretty. Yes. She had curly hair.
Yes. Yeah.
That she was like they had like a history or something.
Yeah. The idea was he was going back to see her. He had seen her before.
Right.
That was the only time before. But she wasn't of this world. That's the thing. So when Joe came along, they wanted her to be very...
Wait, she wasn't of this world?
Meaning like of their hunting, wasn't it?
Oh. Right. Like you don't mean she was an ethereal being. You just mean like...
No. I mean like of the world of like their hunting family world.
Yeah.
Right.
Whereas Joe was like, they wanted Joe to be the equivalent.
Yeah.
Like his match. Yeah.
Exactly. And a hunter, another hunter like him. So we've seen Joe a few times now. Up until this point, you could say she admired Sam and Dean. But after her mother tells her the truth, do you think she questions her desire to be a hunter? So after her mother tells her the truth, I guess, about John Winchester, is she questioning sort of about her desire to be a hunter? Because this episode is all about her wanting to be on the hunt with them. And they lie to mom so that she's there.
I think that when I'm trying to remember how I approached it back then. I don't remember it affecting her desire to be a hunter. It was more about you finally find people who are, you know, she grew up in this bar. She's seen hunters left and right, but these are people she actually got to have this experience with for the first time, you know, personally. She was in the fire with them, and to find out that they were lying, it's kind of like it's a growing up moment. For her, I don't know that it made her not want to be a hunter. That's something that's so far embedded in who she is. And it's not like she didn't know, you know, the history of her family, and she's seen hunters die and she's seen it happen. So it was more about a connection with somebody who you could partner up with or have a future with, and finding out that maybe that's, you know, when people disappoint you, it just takes a toll.
Totally. Great answer. That makes a lot of sense.
No, you had mentioned, you know, that weird going into the forum, not weird by you, but like how the fans' affection or lack thereof was definitely steering the ship back then, you know, probably still today, but it was new. Like that, the idea of forums was very, 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 very new.
Extremely new.
I wonder how much, and this is again, a question for all three of us, because there's no real right answer, but I wonder how confusing that was for people creating shows, because it was so new. It wasn't like fan mail came in and they're like, Michael J. Fox has a lot of people who like him, you know, a week later. It's like instantaneous. An episode would come out and immediately there's this response all over the web, this new thing that, you know, the web. I wonder if that, I would imagine it kind of put the fear of God in some of these writers' rooms to go, Jesus Christ, they don't even marinate on it. Like they watch it and 6 minutes later, they've torn it apart or beloved it or whatever. Like what a weird space it was back then.
Well, that was the thing that as soon as I saw those responses, I had an oh shit moment, because I wasn't sure that they were reading it, but you know about like focus groups, that's been something that's been going on for ages and ages, right? People want that the executives and the networks and the writers, and not maybe the writers, but producers want to know what will work. So this is not a new thing. It was just a much, like you said, a quicker response that cost them nothing. All they had to do was like log on and see how people are responding. So I didn't think that it was, I saw it coming is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
And I think that they were, I think it, you know, just like everything in this business, it didn't cost them any money to get a reaction and to get feedback. So I'm sure that was a good thing, you know, for them to be able to steer the ship in the direction that their core base wanted.
Right. Well, it hasn't slowed you down an iota because you have gone from that show to show to show.
Absolutely.
And you're on SEAL team for 5 years. Yeah. So, I mean, but a talented group of, I assume it's an aquatic show about SEALs who travel from seaport to seaport entertaining children. Am I right?
Can you imagine the disappointment that I had when I found out that was not the case? I was like, do I get to give them fish? Do I get to work with a trainer? I'm very much an animal person.
You had just mastered bouncing a ball on your nose 10, 20 times in a row and then found out.
I bought a wetsuit.
Sure. Yeah.
It was so disappointing. I mean, I still wore the wetsuit to work. Of course. It was very awkward.
Yeah.
How has that show been to work on? And you work with AJ Buckley, who's a Supernatural alum.
I do. I love, that was such a pleasant surprise. Unfortunately, like he and I didn't get to do a lot of scenes for a very long time, but I can tell you that recently I've gotten to work with him personally. You know, I got to actually have lines with
him, interact with the man.
Which is, he's so freaking talented. He's such a funny person. He's such a chameleon too, because how he looks now and the character that he created for SEAL Team and how he was on Supernatural, any other show for that matter that he's been on, is so different. And that I don't think people fully realize exactly the level of talent that this person possesses.
Yeah.
And I watch him and I keep telling him, and I think he's annoyed with me because I was like, this is so great watching you. You're so fun. And he's I think he's annoyed with me.
Why is he annoyed at you?
Because I'm such a fangirl on him sometimes because I love what he's doing. And it's not that I'm a fangirl. I appreciate him as an actor.
Men hate it when other very talented people laud them with praise for their skill set. They just hate it.
He's a shy person, it seems, at least with sometimes to get compliments. But I'm very excited. I'm hoping I'll get to like work with him more.
Yeah.
This next season, because that would be ideal. Yeah. We haven't had the chance to talk about his Supernatural days. And that's a shame because I should actually ask him.
Yeah. We got a chance to talk to him a few episodes ago, and, you're right. He's such a chameleon. We're big fans of his as well. And, you know, when I first met him at one of the conventions, he had an Irish accent. I didn't realize he was raised Irish, and I was like, what the hell? And it's completely different than the guy he played on the show.
Yeah.
And then we've run into him a couple more times. I'm like, who is he now? And then we talked to him on the phone the other day, completely different guy. He was had like a Southern accent.
Cause his character is very Sonny Quinn. He's got this, like, he's got this accent down. He's so committed, and he's, you know, he has Hebrew tattoos on him and like in Hebrew. And that was really how I was like, you want me to tell you what it says? That's how I got to talk to him. I don't know. I feel weird. I love AJ. I really do. But it was one of those like, hey, remember me? In season one.
I'll tell you what struck me about AJ, aside from all the things you're both saying, which are all true, is how I knew him from Supernatural. And I don't mean knew him. I just had seen his work and maybe met him at a con once or something. And then I saw that he was doing SEAL Team, and he was the size of a fucking bread truck. And I'm like, what? He'd been this scrawny nerd, and then he was just a brick shit house. And I was like, good Lord, that's a transformation.
It's if you notice, that's a trend. I don't know if you've ever watched SEAL Team, but that's kind of been a trend with all the boys there. And I kind of feel like it was a trend for Jensen and Jared there for a while. Do you remember when they had the workout truck?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
On set?
Yeah.
And those boys got 15.
Yeah.
And it was terrifying to watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also kind of exciting.
But you couldn't take your eyes off them. I know. Oh, I'm aware.
It's very difficult.
Yeah. It's a curse for them. I feel terrible.
Same thing with the SEAL Team boys. They've like, there's jokes being written about their shirts being too small on them now because they've all like gotten twice as big, I think.
Well done, SEAL team guys. Well, you got to be fit to work with those sea creatures. You know what I mean? Yeah. You don't want to, they'll slip out of your hands.
Yeah.
Rowdy.
Yeah, Rich, you and I should have a spinoff called Goldfish Team.
Exactly.
As long as it's not Starfish Team.
That's true.
There's a lot of jokes there. We'll let those jokes sit right there on the ground and not pick them up. It's so great to have you. Thank you for coming and having this conversation with us.
Really happy to talk to you. And
yeah, it's great.
Finally to meet you and, you know, to meet another member of the Supernatural family.
I was very excited to get a chance to talk to you guys. I also am a huge fan of your work on the show because I've actually seen it.
Oh, awesome. Every night
before I go to bed. I think no, but seriously, I am really grateful that you asked me to come and chat. It's been fun. And any chance I get to like interact with anything that has to do with the supernatural world, I do it in a heartbeat because the fans have been so amazing.
Well, good, because we're going to have you back. So thank you for enjoying this process.
Yes.
Nailed it.
Thank you
so much. What a treat. Ahoy, Rich Spade here. Hope you're enjoying the episode, but we got to pull over for a second for some messages.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. Now back to the episode. What a great interview.
Yeah.
By us. You and I are so talented. No. what a great person to interview. I mean, we don't know her that well, and now I'm a big fan. She's such a lovely and bright spirit, and obviously very talented. But open and fun person to talk to.
Yeah, sometimes when I talk to actors, you know, especially someone like that, I go, oh, no wonder she works all the time. She's, you know, she's positive, she's open, she's professional, she's enthusiastic, and a real great personality. Really lovely.
And incredibly talented. Incredibly talented.
Yeah, she was great. And I was going to say, there was something that she said in the interview where I was like, oh, I got to ask about that. I can't remember. I should have written it down.
Great segue, Rob.
Thank you. Wait, let's cut that out, guys.
No, it's just magic. Do not cut that. You cut that out, Trey, I quit.
Cut to the next episode. Hey, guys, it's just Rob Benedict.
It's Rob Benedict and Sock Puppet.
It was something about... What happens? I guess I don't know what happens. So I don't know when they stop going to Harvell's. I don't know.
I guess we'll find out, you know.
Yeah. But she's great. And just another terrific guest star in the Supernatural library.
And, you know, guest star, but high impact player who shows up many times.
That's what I meant when I said guest star.
I mean, I'm just saying Supernatural's really good at doing that. Most shows, I mean, I just think Supernatural, especially the first 5 years, built this unbelievable roster of guest stars. You know, what they didn't do by having a large regular cast, they made up for by having like the world's strongest guest cast. That
recurring
would
cast. Yeah. The recurring cast. Yeah, for sure.
Really unique design because, you know, you roll the dice doing that they're not going to be available. Like Missouri Mosley, you know, they ended up coming up with Jim Beaver's character because Missouri Mosley went on to do something else. And then it's just interesting. Jeffrey Dean Morgan kind of made comment that like he would have done more, but for the fact that he ended up doing other things. So, you know, that model of don't put them on contract, let's just call them up and see if they're available is, I guess, risky, but it paid off for Supernatural.
Yeah. And the other thing that they do in the writing of it is they kind of leave it open-ended. So they cast these roles. I think everyone we talked to who's recurring didn't quite know they were going to be recurring at first. Certainly that's the case for me and you, but everybody. And so they leave it open-ended. So if they cast a dud, they could, you know, change the direction a little bit. But they wound up casting in it is terrific and, you know, really great actors and it turns out great people.
For sure. Absolutely. Agreed.
Let's talk about the mythology behind this episode in a section we like to call mythology.
Mythology.
Herman Webster Mudgett, a.k.a. Dr. Henry Howard Holmes, is actually a mass murderer that lived from 1861 to 1896. He confessed to 27 murders. However, some of the people he confessed to killing were still alive.
That is incredibly clever.
Talk to me about that one, Rich.
Because you're like, I've killed so many people, you'll never catch me. Like, sir, everybody you've confessed to killing is standing in this room. They're all alive. Yes, exactly as I planned. Like, maybe he wasn't a serial killer. Maybe he was just a nutbag.
Yeah, that doesn't, that's, for some reason, that's not very scary.
Oh, he's just the world's worst murderer.
Yeah, he's the world's best chef, but most of the things he made, he actually never made.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He did indeed build a murder castle, quote unquote, in Chicago to carry out the crimes.
Oh, well, then that's, you know, then there you go.
Look, at the end of the day, he's definitely guilty of being a creep, one world-class creep. Much of the lore surrounding the site are likely due to sensational journalism or lies from Holmes. Well, what's going on here?
Yeah, he's writing his own story here. I don't like it.
He often lied or shared contradictory accounts of things. Shortly after his capture, the building was burned down by an arsonist.
Interesting story about the arsonist. The arsonist claimed to have burned down 27 buildings, yet half the buildings he claimed to have burned down were still standing.
Still standing.
I thought what was interesting is the murder castle he built. He was a lover of dogs, and he had a murder doghouse attached to the murder castle for his little hound.
Right.
That's the weirdest story we've ever shared. It makes no sense. I've learned less from reading it.
Same. he had a murder tool shed.
Right. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. I actually, one time I had a 4th of July party at his murder pool. Oh, go ahead. Tell us more, Rich.
I'm just saying there's more about this nitwit.
Tell us.
Oh, he was also a known grave robber, selling cadavers to medical schools. I guess he wasn't a known grave robber because they knew that they had a serial killer offering them a cadaver and they bought it. Then I guess those institutions of education are suspect as well. He was also known to commit insurance and real estate fraud and horse theft. This guy was a jackass. What a turd.
Really decent fella. The Pinkerton National Detective Agency finally captured him in Boston.
Well, it sounds like that he left a trail of crimes that a moron could have followed. Good Lord. Don't pat yourself on the back, Pinkerton.
Jesus. He was executed at 34 years old in Philadelphia by hanging, and his body was buried in concrete so that no one could desecrate his corpse or deter grave robbers.
So that no one could desecrate his corpse and no one could deter grave robbers? Again, that doesn't make any sense. Oh, you're saying that they buried his body in concrete so that no one would desecrate his corpse and it would deter grave robbers.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Because that made no sense the way it was written. It said no one would desecrate his corpse or deter... No one would deter grave robbers. Anyway, whatever.
So the grave robbers flocked.
Welcome to our grammar nerd section of the program. This dude did all this by 34. That's the one thing I'll give him. He really had a crap life filled with, you know, useless acts of nothingness, but he did it all by 34. So kudos to him for cramming it in early.
Well, one of the mortuary photos is of Elizabeth Stride, a victim of Jack the Ripper. There are those that speculate H.H. Holmes was also Jack the Ripper. Let me tell you something. No, he was not.
Yeah, I'm guessing. Look, I don't know Jack the Ripper. I've never met Jack the Ripper, but this man was no Jack the Ripper.
No.
This guy was Jack the Ripoff.
Exactly. He's a fucking con artist and fraud.
By the way, Jack the Ripper must be like, you thought I was who? Oh, what? Oh, man, no.
a murder
is this guy,
house?
Like, Jack Dripper is going like, okay, let me just say from the grave, all the ladies that I sliced open from stem to stern were sliced open from stem to stern. They didn't end up walking around. They weren't, you know, walking around with no scarring on them. Like, I didn't make stuff up. I'm Jack the freaking Ripper.
Man, this guy.
Yeah, so, and by the way, was this guy set in England? Was this...
No,
for some reason I didn't know where's he based?
Chicago. His murder mansion was in Chicago.
Well, then why the hell would they think he's Jack the Ripper? Jack the Ripper is England.
None of these facts make sense, Rich. Which leads me to our next section.
Fun facts. I'm laughing already. Fun facts.
This episode is named after a French play about three strangers trapped in a room in hell.
Yes, it's a I believe it's a
Jean-Paul Sartre.
Sartre and the. We had to read it in French class, and the French title was Huit Clos.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Huh. Yes, this is the first time four people are in the Impala.
Hey, that is a fun fact. Jared and Jensen were joking around, and some of the crew members got pushed in the water during one of the sewer scenes, including director Kim Manners. In revenge, Kim rearranged the schedule so that at the end of the shoot day, there would be a shot where Jared and Jensen had to crawl down a hole into a sewer with no way out. As the two were climbing down the hole, Manners grabbed 2 5-gallon buckets of water down the hole, soaking the actors. This can be seen in the season 2 outtakes reel.
I did not
know that.
I didn't know it, but I'm glad it happened.
When was there water in the sewer scene?
I don't remember.
I remember that. I guess there must have been water as they were walking.
Huh.
Oh, well. Well, we learned a lot, and yet we learned nothing on this post section.
I'll tell you what. I loved every minute I spent with Alona Tall. I resent every minute I spent reading the mythology, which I think is the mythology is all mythical, all made up.
I give this episode a mustache.
I give this podcast episode? Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. No, it was great. It was great to finally meet Alona Tall. I've heard a lot about her. She's one of those people in the convention circuit where a lot of you guys have met her and I still never had. She's a legend in the world of Supernatural because she was on, you know, she's one of the first recurring characters involved with The Boys. So it was fun to talk to her.
Oh, yeah. So fun.
Catch us on the next one, guys. And in the meantime, tell your friends that we're a podcast.
Well said, Rob. Way to go with the hard sell.
This episode of Supernatural features Jared Padalecki as Sam Winchester and Jensen Ackles as Dean Winchester.
Guest stars include Alona Tall as Joe Harvell, Samantha Ferris as Ellen Harvell, Andrea Brooks as Katie Burns, and Lisa Marie Kruk as Teresa Ellis.
No Exit was written by Matt Whitten, directed by Kim Manners.
Edited by David Ekstrom. Music by Christopher Lennertz.
Executive produced by Eric Kripke and Robert Singer.
The original broadcast of this episode featured the following songs. Surrender by Cheap Trick. Cold as Ice by Foreigner.
This episode originally aired on November 2nd, 2006.
This episode of Supernatural Then and Now was hosted and executive produced by Richard Spate Jr. and Rob Benedict.
Produced by Stephen Hine. Written by Stephen Hine and Haida Holscher.
And edited and associate produced by Trey Booty.
What's up, Booty?
Music provided by Tim Wynn.
The episode was recorded with the help of Sonic Fuel Studios.
This podcast is from Story Mill Media.
Follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter at SPN Then and Now.
Guest stars include Alona Tall as...
Oh, that's lovely. Oh, Jesus Christ.
I have COVID.
He does. Shortly after his capture of the build... Shortly after...
We need a section called, Who Made This Shit Up? Oh, man, that was funny.
Story Mill Media.